This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I think this is episode 625 on our way to 2000. So this, I think, is like the first episode of year 13. So here we go. It's been a good week. Got a lot of good things done. Got the book finished up. Let's see, at the end of last week, got it finished up on time. Finished up my read through last week. Yes. And into the beginning of this week, I think it's all fine. I had some editing to do, but I think it's all fine. I have the cover roughed in. I have to take pictures of the kiddos probably Saturday, which is well within scope. Probably could have done that a little earlier, but it's going to be raining. It was raining for days this week, so this is Thursday. The kiddos are out and about
tomorrow.
Tomorrow and then Saturday, we're going to try to get the kiddos shot, and then I should be able to fold them into the cover on Sunday, get all the files done, uploaded. If I can get that done Sunday, then it's taxes. Got to get my taxes done. And I know they've extended the deadline, yada, 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 but I'm just going to get mine done, get them sent, get it done, done and done and done. So that's all fine and well. I've got a few more hours of work to do on the costume for tomorrow, National Button Week. But I think that's going to be fine. I kind of did a preliminary try-on earlier in the week and have adjusted some things and made some more stuff and yada, yada, yada. But I think it'll be fine. I have a little bit. It's going to be a cute little bit. It'll be fine. So that's all as well there. Now it's just getting the books ordered, finding beta readers, and then come April 1st, I will drop into working on book 15. And once I get book 15 roughed in, and I think I know how I'm going to start, I think. Once I get book 15 roughed in, I will be in the single digits of books left to go. Because right now, I've got 14, which means I have 10 left to go. But once I get 15 done, there will be 9. I will be in the single digits, which is just pretty incredible. And once I hit 9 is actually 9 left to go, which will be book 16, will be 2/3 of the way. It will be the climax of opus number 2 of the 8 books that constitute the second opus of this whole series. And that means we will be moving out of the Revelation opus and into the Nightmare opus. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. It's unbelievable. It's just, you know, you just keep slogging along and things keep going out. I'm not gonna say it's good things, but it's things. It's at least things. But it's been a really cool project. I really have loved this project. It's given me time to do a lot of writing. And to do writing under deadlines of pressure, variety of circumstances where I just have to write. You can't wait for the perfect time to come along to write. You know, you can't wait for the perfect atmosphere or the perfect inspiration. You just have to write. So I have a nugget of an idea of what book 15 is about. I have a nugget of some moments in book 16. So then I just have to wait and see. This will be interesting. This will be interesting. Anyways, so that's good. I have, this week, I think I mentioned a couple of weeks ago. Last week, obviously, was the yearly roundup. That was fun. Week before last, though, I was, I should have looked it up. There was one of the podcasts where I was doing this interesting thing where people are trying to decipher what's happening and are trying to come up with an explanation for what's going on. I had watched, that's right, I had watched a podcast between Tristan Harris and Brent Weinstein where they were talking about, in my terminology, they were talking about the fact that social media is a flesh amplifier. And I kind of talked about the mechanisms of that a little bit. Well, this last week, I had seen a podcast between Brent Weinstein and Jordan Peterson. I had seen it on my list, and I hadn't watched it. And someone had recommended it to me and said, hey, this is really good. And so I keyed it up, and I'm not quite finished with it, but I've come across enough interesting things. It is, if you want to look it up on YouTube and give it a watch, it is Jordan Peterson's podcast, and it is podcast episode, season 4, episode 10. Season 4, episode 10 of Jordan Peterson's podcast with Brent Weinstein. So, what was interesting to me about this was that they were talking along and they were talking about the developments, and Brent Weinstein, Jordan Peterson had asked Brent Weinstein to kind of go through what had happened to him again at Evergreen College, Evergreen University, whatever it's called. And then he had asked him, why did you feel it was important to stand up and say no and object to the things that were going on there? And perhaps you could say, well, they didn't really understand, just like Jordan Peterson really didn't understand the kind of pushback and the kind of vitriol and the kind of attacks that would come his way because of raising his hand and standing up and dissenting from the common wisdom. And that's certainly part of it, and maybe that would have given them pause. But at the same time, they very much are the type of people that when something doesn't seem right, when they have first principles that say this thing isn't right, then they're going to speak up. Well, as part of all that, they got talking about the societal changes, things that are going on now. In the previous podcast between Tristan Harris and Brent Weinstein, they were talking about this rise of tribalism that we're seeing. And I was talking to a friend this morning about it. And he said, well, he said, if you look back, you'll always see that young people have always been kind of off their rockers. And I said, well, yes, that's true. But I said, it's far more than just young people now. And I related to him that I have a friend who's a scientist, who is still now full-blown Trump derangement and has deranged ideas, I mean a cognitive derangement, with things like binary thinking, that there's no middle ground, it's either black or everything's black or white, and overgeneralization and catastrophizing and strawmanning, you know, and ad hominem attacks. I mean, it's still very much present in our dialogues, even though Trump has been out of office now for months. It's still very much present. And, you know, so I said, it's more than just young people. It is something that is pervasive, that is working through all of society. And really, very much so, I was telling a friend today, you know, it's really very much, and I've mentioned this before, that there is no discussion anymore. It's just people calling each other witches, you know? And of course, once you call someone a witch, then, you know, that's the end of the discussion. You can't, there's no place to go after that. It's just, you're a witch. That's it. You're done. And we were laughing today about, you know, getting out the enormous scales like they have in Monty Python so that you can weigh, you know, the witches and figure out if they weigh the same as a duck. And, you know, then you can throw them in the lake, and if they drowned, then they're not a witch, but if they float, they're a witch. And so therefore they need to be burned at the stake. I mean, there is, while Monty Python made a mockery of those things, that mindset is very much alive in a lot of the woke stuff. And one of the things that I find very, very interesting is that the same people that were condemning the single-minded, closed-mindedness in the past from people on the conservative side or people from the religious right, what's happening on the left now is we're manifesting those exact same characteristics. Very closed-minded. If you don't agree with me, you're condemned and going to hell. They don't quite use that same terminology, but it's basically the same thing. If you don't agree with me, you are evil. You are profoundly evil, and you deserve to be destroyed, and you deserve to burn. I mean, it's really fascinating. So at one point in this podcast, and I'll try to make this quick because I do have things I have to get done this evening. One of the things in this podcast is that oftentimes when Jordan Peterson and Brent Weinstein and others are talking about it, they keep talking about this thing that's happening, and when it happens, and when it comes about, and Jordan Peterson, you know, had the presence of mind during this podcast where he said, I wanted to ask you what we talked about, and I wanted to bring to this discussion, if you don't mind us, back to what we were touching on earlier, that your initial objection when you were at Evergreen, whatever it was that was developing in the background, and now we've had 4 years to see whatever it is manifesting. So what is it? What is it that that's happening to you in our political landscape? So what is happening, Jordan Peterson is saying? What in your interpretation to Brent Weinstein, what is causing this? What's happening here that seems fundamentally different? And Brent Weinstein is always insightful. I don't obviously agree with everything, but he's always insightful. And one of the key things that I heard him say several weeks ago that I thought was really important is that you have to understand that we are in a transition in our ideas of what is real. So we've talked about in the past that we all live within our own simulation. So we grow up with inputs. You know, we stub our toe on a chair, it hurts. You know, someone throws a ball towards us. If we don't try to catch us, it hits it, it hurts. You know, there's all these different things. We have to learn to feed ourselves with. And so as we're having all these sensory inputs, we are building this simulation of the world in our mind about how the world works, what it is, what its characteristics are. So we build this simulation in our mind, and then we live in that simulation. There's a certain generation, my generation, actually my dad's generation, who were well into their lives. I mean, well into their lives, into their 60s, into their 70s, before they were ever exposed to anything on the internet. And so they lived in a certain environment, we'll call it the real world, in real life. Then there were others of us who, you know, as the baby boomers, we saw it coming. Some of us participated in it coming. And so we have a slightly different viewpoint, slightly better understanding of what the internet is and how to work it. And then there are those who come after us, the millennials, who have, half their life has been spent with the internet. And then there's a generation and generations after them who have not known anything but the internet. And Brent Weinstein's point is that what we might be experiencing here is the conflict between those for whom the internet and social media is more real, occupies greater space in their simulation of the world, than the real world. And I think we see this manifesting. And in fact, we see the potential for people even my age to become so enamored with social media and internet and all those things that they would much rather sit there with their heads down, poring over their phones, than engage in conversation. And so that world then becomes their world. And so Brent Weinstein was talking about that, and he was talking about the differences between the internet and the virtual, the social media and the real world. And he was saying, he was trying to make the point that the internet media, social media of, you know, the virtual world is postmodern. And by that, he means it's just important what your experience is. There is nothing that's immutable. Everything can be reprogrammed. New rules can be written all the time. If you, for instance, in the virtual world, want to have a virtual calculator where you put 2 + 2 = 5 and it comes out to 5, you can just do that. You just change the rules. So it doesn't matter. And in his example, you know, if I as a man want to identify as a woman, I change my avatar, I change my name, I change, you know, my presence online, I go take out other accounts, and suddenly, for all practical purposes, I am a woman. Because that's the way the virtual world works. And what he sees then is this effort to push back into the real world the characteristics of the virtual world, because it appeals to people more. Now, by appeals to, we'll get to that in a minute. And so you have this process whereby the virtual world has a certain draw and a certain pull and certain ways of relating that are in conflict with what we would consider the real world. Well, that led the two of them, which is a very interesting discussion, into a discussion about identity and the formulation of identity. Because obviously, if I as a man want to identify as a woman, what I'm really interested in doing is changing my identity. And it's a lot harder to do that in the physical world because, you know, even if I'm going to simulate changing my identity, if that's all I'm trying to do, there's still hormones involved and there's surgeries involved. And even that doesn't get me there. Honestly, it does not, because there are immutable characteristics like sex that we, in the strictest of definitions, we say that women produce eggs, men produce sperm, and that sex is defined in your role in the bifurcated sexual reproduction process. And I know people try to raise little queries and quandrums and how that some people are born with, but the vast majority, and this has gone back, according to the evolutionary biologists, hundreds of millions of years, there is a duality in sexual reproduction across all the animals, that you have an egg and a sperm and they get together and ta-da. And that's how we define male and female, by who produces those. So you have this inherent tension then between people who want to image and live in the virtual world versus people who image and live in the real world. But then in addition to that, in terms of identity, Jordan Peterson correctly pointed out that people go through phases in the development of their identity. So when they're children, they can pretend to be lots of things, and their parents sort of provide a hedge around them. But then he was saying, as you get into 7 through 17, 18, you begin to work with your peers, and you bounce off your peers. If you're living in the real world, you bounce off your peers, and you start making adjustments to your identity, because some things work and some things don't. And at the end of the day, you want people to cooperate with you. You want to be able to play together. Because you want to be able to harness your resources to accomplish something. And so you have to learn this negotiation of how your identity interacts with the others. It's not just a matter of me demanding that, well, I am this and everybody has to conform to me. That's the way of children. That's not the way of those who are moving towards adulthood. And then, you know, as you move into adulthood and your brain stabilizes and you get to be 25 and older, then your identity settles in. And so they were combining these two ideas of the virtual world and forming an identity in the virtual world and all that kind of stuff. But they, in my opinion, they were dancing around the edges of it. It's still all dancing around the edges of it, because the really crucial thing for me is to understand that there is a driver towards destruction at the heart of who we are. And the things that appeal to us most often are driven by that driver to destruction, not because they're good for us, not because they will help us to succeed, but precisely because they will help destroy us. I was sharing with a friend this week how I hated email. I hated email when it first came out. Because if I have a face-to-face conversation with someone, I can read all sorts of things from the conversation, and I can move my behavior towards theirs so that we can have a good and meaningful conversation and share things. It's not just me spouting and then waiting for the other person to talk until I can spout some more. It's an actual conversation, a dialogue back and forth. Phone was okay, because I would still have some of the overtones in the voice and the inflections, and I could tell. Email, we'd lost all that, and I hated it. And, you know, I hated it more and more as it got more and more confining. You know, like text messages, 140 characters. Well, and Jordan Peterson said at one point, you know, we're running this massive experiment. How do people interact at 140 characters? How do they interact when you have so severely limited what they have to work with? And honestly, there's a reason that Twitter is a dumpster fire. Because you've constrained people, and then you're rewarding them by giving them retweets and those kind of things and attention. You're rewarding them for very primitive reactions that are driven by the flesh. And so, you know, you end up with what is it that's happening? And as we've mentioned before, what it is that's happening, as far as I'm concerned, is you've given fertile ground to the flesh. And you've given it tools whereby keeping people torn up, keeping people angry, keeping people envious, keeping people lustful, that's the path to success in those environments. And one of the things that the flesh does to succeed in bringing destruction into our life is isolation. And if it can change, if it can change our internal simulations to be based on lies, if it can change that internal simulation to be based on anger and envy and oppression so that everywhere you look, that's all you see, it has effectively put that person on a path to destruction. And if you don't have any true cause in life, if you don't have any true purpose in life, and you end up thinking that success is merely how many clicks you get and how many likes you get and the kind things that people say to you, if that's your whole thing, well, you can go along and have 1,000 compliments, and if one person is critical towards you, it's just going to ruin your whole day. You will have no stability because the flesh will pick that one thing and just drill your attention on it. And the more it can get you encased in this isolation, the more it has your attention, because at the base of it, your flesh is a far greater attention hog than social media is. Your flesh wants to guide you and to hold hostage your attention to anything that's destructive. And social media is just a tool for it then. Because anytime you upload something, it's how many likes you get. Oh, well, nobody likes you. And blah, blah, blah. I mean, there's just all this stuff that's going on. And I think we as Christians, followers of Christ, it's extremely important that we constantly remember in our simulations what life is supposed to be about. That we are not alone. That there is a God, that he wishes to communicate with us, that he wishes to be involved in our lives, and he has high purposes for us. Paul says that we are his workmanship, created for good works, and that word workmanship is really a better creative endeavor. We are his poem. We are meant to do something. You know, the Bible is littered with things. In Micah, it says, he has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. There is interaction built into that. That we are not to be isolated presence in the world. That we are to be contenders in the world. We are to be involved in the world and with each other. Jesus was asked, teacher, what is the greatest commandment? And Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and strength, and all your mind. And this is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. We are here to interact with others and show God's goodness and kindness to others. You know, when John was in prison, he sent his disciples and he says, look, are you the guy? Because John was expecting Jesus to establish a kingdom. So he sent his disciples to ask, are you the one who is to come or should we expect someone else? And Jesus replied, go back and report to John what you've seen. The blind receive their sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. It's the gospel, our gospel is meant to be the outreach to this world. Jesus said that we are to be salt and light. All the descriptions that we have of our existence here are engaging descriptions. We are here to do a work. And all of those things require us to be engaged in the physical, real world. And in that engagement, to be love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control. And what's happening in social media is that everyone is getting cocooned in this very restrictive, turmoil-generating, lust-generating, anger-generating, rigid, everything has to agree with me environment. And we have to be better than that if we're going to be salt and light. We have to be better than that and being able to interact with people in whatever mechanisms we choose, such that, as Jesus said, that we are wise as serpents and harmless as doves, that we are ready to engage with people and show forth his light, show forth his handiwork, show forth his creativity. Brighten the corner where you are. If we would all just make a point to just brighten the corner where we are, we can do some amazing thing, because it's time. People are hungry for something besides all this haranguing and accusation and fist shaking. They're ready. And we as followers of Jesus Christ should be positive. You know, we should be loving. And we need to understand what's happening. I've said it before, but it's worth repeating. If you are on social media and you feel yourself getting angry or anxious, that's because you're listening to lies that the flesh is telling you. Because at the end of the day, we are everlasting creatures. And there is a loving God who has redeemed us and loves us and wants to be engaged in our lives. So there is nothing to fear. And we are loved far more than we will ever comprehend. And if you are in turmoil, and if you are anxious, it's because you have believed some lie, and you've integrated that into your simulation that you have of the world. And sometimes it's a process to get backed out of that. But he loves you, and he wants you backed out of that. And if you will begin to simply start practicing the attitudes of gratefulness, that's really an excellent place to start. Just try to find things to be grateful for every day. Do the things you know you need to do. Instead of just hearing him going, oh, I'll get to that sometime. No, do those things. Be kindness, be love. You'd be just amazed how things worked out. And I am way over. I gotta go do stuff. So anyways, I have made it home. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. That has to be our standards. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.